Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Hey, this is Trevor from Halifax calling in to say that I support Creative Control on Patreon because I think long-form arts journalism is a crucial part of music culture, and there's simply not enough of it out there today. Vish is a master interviewer, he lands great guests, and he has his finger on the pulse of the ever-changing music landscape both here in Canada and abroad. For all of these reasons and many more, I think you should support Creative Control on Patreon too.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. I am Visha's wife, and I will love him no matter what you do. And now he has me on the record saying that.
Alex Edkins, Hayden Menzies, and Chris Lorak are each talented musicians, songwriters, and artists who live their respective lives in Toronto, Ontario. Since around 2007, the trio have worked together as the mighty and prolific underground rock band Metz, releasing countless singles, a couple of live albums, and 5 proper studio records. Their latest album is a wonderful one called Up on Gravity Hill, which was released by Sub Pop Records on April 12th, 2024. As such, Alex, Hayden, and Chris return to this show for a nice discussion about things like tiny cans of soda pop and kitty cats, the evolution of Metz and the beginning of a new chapter, the hard themes and dynamic emotional tenor of Up on Gravity Hill, how they surprise each other as musicians, the role of music videos in our lives and how songs can be devalued, loving Eric's trip, working with people like producer Seth Manchester, filmmaker Colin Medley, and strings expert Owen Pallett, comfort, confidence, and consumption, touring again, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this listener-supported and donor-driven podcast. Spread the word about it. Leave nice reviews and ratings on your podcast platform if you can take a second to do that. That actually really helps. And make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary and most reliable way for podcasters like me to make a living. As I'm speaking to you, this is my primary source of income. All amounts are welcome, but if you or someone you know might be a wealthy patron of the arts, please consider making a large monthly donation and support me on Patreon. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a wonderful record store with bricks and mortar locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta, and a great website, blackbird.ca, where you can order records if you want them. Say you want to order yourself a copy of Up on Gravity Hill. Go to blackbird.ca, type it in there in the search box, and if they can stock it, they'll send it right to your house. It's just that simple. Plus, in-kind support from independent businesses like Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 854 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Alex, Hayden, and Chris from Metz, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, Metz, how's it going?
Hello.
Hey! Hi!
It is, that was a chaotic hello, as I like to do them. Thank you for being back on the show, everyone. It's nice to see you.
You too.
I love you all very much. I'll start off the conversation saying I love you in case things go untoward and we dislike each other by the end. Let's begin talking to everyone individually. Chris, how's it going?
Going good. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you. I'm full of homemade apple pie and a sandwich, and I had a little tiny can of ginger ale. That's my allowance. I say, oh, I should not drink soda pop, but then I had to. Do you ever do the tiny cans of soda pop?
Yeah, they're like the price of, I was reading an article the other day for some reason about this exact thing, and they're saying those tiny cans are now the price of like a normal can, and a normal can's like $3.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating that everything sucks. I'll say that because I thought we were saving money. I thought it was easier on the teeth. I find the 355 mil in Canada, it's too much. I'm always like, I just needed a few sips. I don't need this whole fucking can. You know what I mean?
But now you got those little ones.
Yeah.
Perfect.
It's V size. It's good. Don't say that. Don't say my cans are small. I don't even know what that means. Anyway, thank you very much for being back on the show. In all seriousness, how are things going for you generally? And also, as I always do, I forgot to ask where you were. So let's do two things. Where in the world are you, Chris?
I'm at home in Toronto, sitting in the third floor of my home. That is also my cat's toilet.
Oh, no. The whole room? The cat? Why didn't you get a box? Aren't they supposed to have a little box?
Well, there's a little box, but it's the only thing this room's really ever used for is just a cat shitting.
So wait a minute. You get the notification from whoever that Vish wants to talk to you, and you decide to go into the shit room? That's what you're thinking? I deserve better?
My daughter is home from school today. My wife is working from home. This is all I got.
Okay. Well, no. I appreciate you making any time for me at all, and I'm sorry it smells, which I'm sure it does, but it's lovely. Lovely to see you. Alex, are you there?
I am.
Nice to see you, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yeah, thanks. It's been too long, I think.
Yeah, I feel like we talked about your solo record there and then the last Metz record. Yeah, we've talked. Sorry, I should have just said, yes, it has been too long. Not feels like a lot, actually.
It's been too long. All right.
It has been a while. Where in the world are you?
I'm in Toronto as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
And how are things going generally for you?
Good. Incredibly busy times with the album coming out soon. We are running all over town, getting gear ready for tour, rehearsing. Oh my, it's a lot, but it's exciting too. So
yeah, well, I appreciate you making time for me, given all the stuff that's going on there, and congratulations on your new album. It's wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, it's our pleasure to chat with you.
Oh, I appreciate that. And last but not least, certainly not least, Hayden, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm very well. It's nice to see you too. Where in the world are you?
Same. I'm in Toronto at home.
Nice. Have you guys ever thought about living like the monkeys, where you're all in the same place all the time, the same house? Has that ever occurred to Mets?
It's called tour.
Well, there's that's right. That's what
we do it. We do it. Yeah.
But you never thought you'd all live together in the same house like the monkeys. I just want to know if bands ever think about being more like the monkeys. I talk to bands all the time, and this never comes up. Hayden, have you ever wanted to live in a house like the monkeys?
Not in recent years. I don't think I'd like everything being filmed.
That's true. Monkeys might have been the first reality TV show, like a Big Brother type thing. I never even thought of that. I haven't seen that show in forever. Did you ever watch that show, Hayden, The Monkees?
I saw clips from time to time. I think my dad used to watch it.
It was not much music.
Yes, that's...
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, wasn't that the new Monkees? Wasn't there a different Monkees?
No.
I think there might have been. I feel like they updated The Monkees.
Maybe it's worth a Google, I suppose.
Maybe I'm making this up. There was a Ben Stiller Show sketch that imagined what the monkeys might be like in modern times, so maybe I'm confused. I'm sorry, yeah. Monkeys fans. I'm sorry. The original monkeys was...
They're just sitting in the living room on their phones.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, anyway, it's really lovely to see you all in your separate domiciles. And Hayden, congratulations to you as well on this new album. How are you feeling about it generally? You got to gear up and play all these songs. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. I'm really excited to be able to play these live. And it's been kind of a fun exercise to refamiliarize with just playing the songs live as opposed to recording. And yeah, just looking forward to it all. I'm excited.
Has Mets been on any kind of a break from playing, an extended break during the... I guess the last time we talked was for the... Yeah, around 2020, I suppose. Have you guys been fairly busy playing together, Hayden, or are you getting back at it for the first time in a long time?
I mean, we never stray too far. We didn't tour very much last year. I think part of that was trying to make sense of things after, you know, after the last couple of years of confusing times with pandemic and obvious reasons, and just to focus on the new record. So it wasn't a conscious decision to take any time off or anything like that. It just kind of materialized into a different approach to a year.
Yeah. Let's talk about that different approach, because I got the biographical information and a few things stuck out for me. Some semblance of the word departure, some semblance of the term evolution. I also, what caught my eye, maturity. Now, anytime you read maturity and punk, you're like, uh-oh, what does that mean? But then you press play on this album and you're like, these guys aren't mature at all. They're as immature as they ever were. What the hell is this bio talking
about? Exactly.
Yeah, I know. It's just, I think maybe.
You're not.
Do you think, Alex, do you know what I'm getting at? What do these little buzzwords mean in relation to this album?
You know, yeah, all it is really is, I think people noticing that we're stretching out a bit and trying new things. And after doing music together for as long as we have, I think that only makes sense. You know, we change as individuals and we change as a band. And I think you can hear that on this, but at the same time, the three of us have a very, dare I say, you know, distinct sound when we come together. And I don't think that will ever really change. I think that's Mets is always gonna have this specific approach to making music and making records that, you know, will be obvious to the listener. I'm proud of that. I'm proud that, you know, I think that when you know it's us.
Yeah.
And I think not many bands can say that, that we've kind of carved our own lane and our own sound. So, but you know, those buzzwords, mature, I don't know. I don't think that was our doing, but like, I think that just, you know, I think that was just a press release or something saying, you know, that we've found new ways to evolve our sound. And, I believe that to be true.
Okay. Chris, I want to go to you on this. First of all, do you agree with the premise that, the band is both different and the same, I guess, is maybe what we were kind of getting at. Like, how would you categorize it at this point?
Yeah, I think every time we're making something new, we're trying to stretch ourselves a little bit. But ultimately, the final product always comes out sounding like Matt's, with, you know, little moments of evolution. I think this one, you know, there's the longest gap between albums that we've had maybe ever. And I think you can kind of feel the evolution of the band a little bit more drastically on this one.
Yeah. I think we're mostly dialing into the music and the arrangements here at this point. Emotionally, Chris, like, do you pick up on a particular tone for this album? I know Alex is here, and I'll ask him about the lyrics, which I assume are still his doing mostly. Somebody nod if I'm correct. Yes, thank you.
You're correct.
So there's the music, and then there's the emotional tone of the lyrics, and in some cases they meet in pretty interesting ways. I'm thinking of Light Your Way Home, for example. Is for some of us, that's like, oh, like, Alex, you're right. I know Metz when I hear Metz. I hear that. Is that Metz? Just for like a second. Yeah. Like a little second. I'm like, oh, that's a bit different. So emotionally, whether that's the music or the lyrics, Chris, can you speak on the tone you pick up on as you listen back to this record?
I have a certain emotional connection to this particular record that, you know, it's pretty personal to me. But yeah, this one has, it's a little deeper emotionally for me in the process of making it and just the, like, everything around it. But I think it kind of feeds into every angle of the music.
Okay. Before I go back to Alex on this for a moment, can we just talk about the time frame? And you say it was emotional making it, and you allude to some things that I don't want to pry about in terms of personal things, I think, is what you were alluding to.
Yeah.
But timeline, when did you guys start working on these songs? And within that, I guess I want to try to extrapolate maybe where the emotion might be coming from. Again, without prying. I say this because collectively we've all been going through a lot of bullshit. And it's been weird and hard. And then personally, we've had some losses. You know, I think of you guys when I think of Rick Froberg quite often, because I know we have a shared connection with him and friendship with him, and we lost him. But I don't want to read too much into these songs in that regard necessarily, although I guess I just asked a leading question. Chris, let's go back to where I was going with this. Timeline-wise, when did you guys start making this record?
I think we would have started... The scraps that we, I mean, where we started pulling from probably was from 2021 or early 2022. And then we went in to record it in towards like the last quarter of 2022. But you're right. There's a lot, like, for me specifically, there's a lot of loss felt in the emotion comes from a lot of loss.
Yeah. I want to say I'm sorry for your losses in particular there, Chris. I know you family and whatnot. I feel the loss here. Alex, and I'm sorry, Hayden, I don't mean to neglect you on this. I just want to talk about the lyrics just for a moment and maybe the lyrical tone. Alex, what were you dialing into with these songs in an overarching sense? I read a lot of loss. Mm-hmm. I hear a lot of loss and longing. Can you speak to where you were coming from?
Yeah, sure. I think a big part of it is that we were working with different textures, different tempos, and I've always sort of just taken a cue from the music as far as where my mind may wander and where the lyrics will go. And that this was definitely a case of that, where there's certain dreamy elements. There's certain, just even slowing down tempos, you're able to sing in different ways. And that made me, I think, you know, dig a little deeper and talk about some things that are, you know, that weigh heavy on my mind. And one of them is, you know, as we enter another tour cycle, a constant kind of heavy weight for me is just, I know all three of us can relate, and I'm sure you can too. Just being away, you know, whatever may tear you away from your family, and this sort of push and pull of that. So, you know, that's the hardest part about being a touring musician by far for me. It's just like trying to find that balance and trying to know if you're doing the right thing with your time when you have loved ones at home, when you have, you know, a child at home. So
I do think there's at least two or three songs on this record that directly speak to that. And then if I were to think of an overarching kind of theme to Up on Gravity Hill, it's this idea of just life being short and us all, you know, one day gonna kick it, and that trying to make sense of that and spend your time as wisely as possible, you know, while we're here. So heavy stuff, not just 2 minute punk blasters, you know, the whole record, as we've done sometimes in the past.
Yeah, I think all of us who have lost people or thought about maybe the general danger in the world right now in all sorts of ways are really grappling with mortality. And I assume this time period may have influenced this batch of songs for you. Just like what, I don't know about you, but I never used to think about death very much. I just never did. I didn't assume it was. So I was like, you know, death, I'm not going to do that. I've decided.
Yeah,
I'm out. It doesn't seem like that's anything same for me or my family. We're out. And then we all encounter it, and we've all had to deal with it in various ways. So, that's definitely. But then you're also talking about missing people just by being away from them, which is a different kind of absence.
Yes, yeah. that's a different type of thing. But I think a song like Superior Mirage is more about how even if people are no longer here living, that amazing feeling of them kind of always being there with you and you carrying them with you, everything you've learned from them in life. And just heavy things like that. And I think, you know, the pandemic sent everyone for a loop, all three of us and everyone in the world. And like Chris said, the time in between records just, I don't know. I think it feels sort of like a new chapter. And I don't usually say such kind of grand statements, you know, but it really does kind of feel like a fresh start, a new chapter to our band. And I don't know. Well, I've never discussed that with the guys. I'm not sure if they would agree, but just due to circumstance, you know, just by being forced off the road and the fact that I think we all realize, you know, stylistically, this record separates itself from the pack. I think it feels, you know, like a new era. Yeah.
You say you've never invoked the phrase new chapter before. Do you think using such terminology is a sign of maturity? I just think maybe. Anyway, I'm just joking around. No, I appreciate that. Hayden, I want to go to you for a second because Alex said a few things. I want to touch upon the your own perception of the emotional tenor of this music, lyrics, the sound of it. But he said something about tempo. Of course, I'm an idiot, so I'm going to go to the drummer on this. But you also said something that, grabbed my ear there. You said you're reacquainting yourself with the old songs as you gear up for tour. And I can't think of a better way to kind of juxtapose the tempo that Alex is alluding to here, like the feel of these new songs as compared to the old ones. So I wonder if you can do two things. So let's get to the emotional part first, and so we can close that loop. But I also think the tempo thing, you know, that's something you're probably really aware of, and the differences, the distinctions between this material and maybe some of the older stuff. Maybe emotions tied into all of that. Sorry for this convoluted question. Let's get to the emotional part first. What's your perception of the kind of emotional tenor of this particular batch of songs?
There certainly is a heaviness to this record, but I think for a lot of reasons. I think because of, like it's been mentioned, the amount of time in between records, a little bit of absence from the road, but still working together towards creating something. And like you alluded to, I think the term tempo is sort of woven in there in terms of the tempo of life. And the it's not necessarily a literal departure from the old records in terms of speed, but I think there is a tempo and a shift in the treatment of those things and trying to recalibrate your existence and your relationships with people and your relationships with your art and the people around you, even if they're not people you are familiar with and not friends or family, like just trying to figure out what pace we are walking at. And are we absorbing valuable things, and are we outputting valuable things reciprocally to the things that matter? And I think the gap in between records and this sort of, not forced, but a heavily suggested reevaluating of some of those things in this line we all walk.
Yeah.
So I think all of those things speak to the emotional attachment to the record, the emotional attachment to the people in our lives, the emotional attachment to just the space we're taking up on a day-to-day basis. You know, so those are all heavily connected, in my opinion, but they can all exist individually. So it's a lot to put together, because they are sort of free of each other, but they also need each other to exist. So yeah. Talk about convoluted. There you go.
No, I deserve that. That based on my question. No, that wasn't convoluted at all. That was really eloquent, actually. Do you think, like, we've talked about the love on this record, the longing, the loss. From your perspective, Hayden, for those who've not seen Metz play before or Hayden play before, as I have been watching Hayden play for, God, what's it been, 30 years? Something like that, I think, Hayden, since... By the way, when I say I've been watching him play, I don't got a camera. I just mean I've been seeing him live. I'm not surveilling you. I just want to be clear. I'm not some creep. My point is this. You're a frenetic, ferocious drummer. So as things get a little more even-tempoed, what does that do to you as a player as you plot out the set? I know this is a kind of a dumb question, because I know this from my own experience. It probably doesn't do much to you at all, but like, you've got to kind of, in some cases, sort of rein it in sometimes, don't you?
There are no dumb questions, but I accept that challenge. Reining it in doesn't necessarily mean softer touch, although it certainly can. Provides a focus that's being asked of me, especially for these songs, that I kind of I'm learning how to revel in, because I just think the songs deserve that, and yeah. I think the outcome is better for it. Yeah. There'll always be our sort of live approach to things and our personal touch on each of those instruments, but I don't know. It's just I'm trying to avoid using the probably most suiting term, which is just you serve the song, you serve the project, and I'm learning to do that more accurately and more intuitively. But it's a challenge I'm accepting, and I think this album deserves that.
With songs about love, absence, grieving, there can be anger. Do you feel like this is also, again, I was trying to get at this before, I think we've touched upon some moods and some tones. Does it feel like a particularly angry record to you, Hayden, from your perspective?
From my perspective, it doesn't seem angry. I don't think any of our songs have been particularly angry, cathartic, sure. I'm not one to say that you can just by choice eliminate anger from some of these things, whether it's a response to, or whether it's just an emotion that just comes naturally to a situation. It needs to be there, but it's a different thing to accept it and confront it and then displace it appropriately.
Yeah.
So I don't feel anger for this record or from this record. I don't feel anger when I'm playing these songs or any songs for that matter, but I do feel a lot of things.
Yeah. Okay. Chris, Alex alluded to the fact that I've been making this joke about this being a new chapter. He also said he hasn't really talked about that with you guys. So hearing that from him, can you speak to what he was saying from your perspective? Does it feel like the band is in a sort of, I don't know what the right term is, some sort of zone of, I guess, okay, fine. Do you think the band is a book and that this is a new chapter in the book of Metz? How about that?
I think every record should be a new chapter, right? There's growth. I mean, the closest related records, and mostly just because we had to make them in such quick succession, would be the first two, right? Yeah. We did so many shows on that first record that the second one had to come together a little bit quicker. But since then, I think every album is a new chapter in a book. And while critics and whatnot might not agree, we all feel like this band is constantly evolving and growing, and we're getting better at our craft. We're getting better at reading how each other work and figuring out how to play off of each other better. So yeah, absolutely, it's a new chapter, just like every record is a new chapter. And this one would be us sort of in our most comfortable at the moment.
comfortable. That's an interesting term. But exploratory? Comfort doesn't necessarily mean...
I think...
You know what I mean?
I think what I mean is, like, we're at our most comfortable in the sense that we feel like we're able to, like, stretch outside of, like, a box that we might have been put in.
I see. Yeah. Because, you know, what happens sometimes, you mentioned critics and whatnot. Am I part of the whatnot, by the way? What part of that group am
I? You're a friend. You exist outside of the critics.
Okay, I appreciate that. I think I've written criticism about Mets in the past, now that I think about it.
Mostly positive.
Yeah, no, but mostly. Did I say anything bad? I don't remember saying nothing bad.
Only in person.
I like you guys. Only in person. I interrupt this episode of my own show for a brief thank you for hearing my call to support me and my work on Patreon. We have seen a lot of growth in Patreon support over the last little while, which is amazing because that's my primary source of income these days. And I love doing this job that I invented for myself a whole lot. Creative Control is a listener-supported podcast. Do podcasters receive any streaming royalties from podcast platforms? No, not any. Does podcast advertising pay the bills? Not for a show at this scale, no. Do all podcasters get paid by companies for their work like some celebrities do? No. No, most of us do not. We do this work to support our communities and because we love it. So what's the most reliable source of income for podcasters like me? Crowdfunding platforms like Patreon. So if you love Creative Control with Vish Khanna and want to see it continue, please see the notes in this episode. Click on the link that takes you to my Patreon and its different donation tiers with various incentives and benefits, and support me and my work today. Thank you again so much.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
No, now I lost my train of thought. You were saying something about the chapters and the emotional tone, and I can't remember what it was, but oh, I remember. I was asking Hayden about playing these actual new songs sort of up against the old ones. Is there anything about anyone's playing on this record that surprised you, Chris, or something on your own? Because that to me is one of the funnest parts of music making, is discovering that you or your colleagues can do something that you didn't really know they could do.
Well,
because I will say,
I was just going to say, it's something that I haven't actually said out loud to anybody. I'm sorry, I'm going to cut you off here. But
yeah,
I would say that I think Alex's guitar playing is probably the best it's ever been on this record. And it's very obvious when you listen that his playing has grown exponentially over the time that we were away from Atlas Bending to now.
Thank you.
Agreed.
Yeah, this is nice. This is why I got you guys together. Hayden, do you want to say something nice about Chris or Alex before I move on?
I completely agree with Alex's playing and his lyrical openness and strength. Also, Chris's performance with adding something special to the songs, as he always does. So I'm in a really good position. I never have to doubt the people I'm playing with on a personal level or musically. So I'm constantly being pushed by what I see around me and the creativity and the, you know, what these guys have to offer constantly.
Yeah.
That sets me up for striving for the best.
If I may say one thing, Alex, your guitar playing on a few songs sticks out for me. No Reservation, Love Comes Crashing. Actually reminds me, I know we've gone down this road before, gentlemen. As you know, I'm a big fan of Alex Dunham, his work in Hoover and and regulator Watts. And every once in a while, if Metz has reminded me of anything, it's that regulator Watts bit. Sorry, does anyone dispute this comparison?
No, regulator Watts stuff.
Yeah. So, and I'll just say I can tell. Like, you and I have the same affinity for that. But also, and I hope I have these song titles correct, Never Still Again. Good Lord, Alex, what the hell is going on with you on that one? Just hopping around there. It's amazing. I was like, holy shit. I didn't know Alex could. I'm always like,
you should hear the demos. My God.
Do they scorch even more than that?
We are on some other fucking level when we were making that, and we had to to bring it back.
Really? Oh my God. It's like, it's just, so for those who haven't heard it, sorry, Alex. Metally? Is it a little metally?
I would say absolutely not metally.
Okay. No, but it's yeah.
Frantic. Maybe, like, yeah, that one's, if you stay away from certain chords and stuff, I feel like you can't be in the metal category, or tunings perhaps. So,
yeah.
But what do I know?
Well, let's just dial into this for a second. By the way, does anyone want to say anything nice about Hayden? I feel like Hayden got short shrift.
Don't you dare.
Does anyone want to say anything nice about Hayden's playing on this?
Hayden has once again shown us all how it's done. He's every one of the records Hayden's always shining. So maybe it's time for us to not compliment him on anything.
I thought it was
looks right now.
Yeah. I thought it was clear. I thought it was well known that, and I truly believe this. I think he's one of the best drummers around in underground music, or whatever you want to call it. I think he has been for a long time. I don't think there's much dispute. I think he's still underappreciated, but really well respected. And, if someone were to ask me, who's your favorite drummer, it'd probably be Hayden. So, we lucked out. We lucked out with that guy.
I thought for sure you were going to say Hayden and someone else.
Levon Helm and Hayden.
Yeah. I have an affinity for the Levon Helm. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, I'll take that compliment.
Ringo, Levon, Hayden.
Yeah.
First name.
Hayden
basis.
Is. Yes, absolutely. And for anyone, you shouldn't say that, because there's a folk guy named Hayden and people will get confused.
Oh, yes. And he doesn't play drums. Don't worry about it.
I think he does play. He actually does play drums. So let's
just
leave this
alone.
Not
as well as our guy.
Not as well. This is the superior drumming Hayden. I will say that. For those who haven't heard or seen Hayden Menzies play, yeah, absolutely one of the greatest drummers in the whole wide world. And I don't mean to make him blush, but absolutely fantastic. And I will say, going back to what I was saying before, yeah, you can be frenetic. You can be Keith Moon, but it takes an equal amount of prowess to be intense. Like, be equally intense and impassioned, but playing, as we've established, maybe slower tempoed, or what's the right term for this? I don't even think they're that slow, these songs, by the way. Does that make?
No, they're
but
not.
They are different.
They're not, but it's like across the record, we're just in this headspace, I think, as a band, to be pushing new things further that we've never done. And, oddly enough, that's sort of one of the things we've never done, is like sat in a pocket where the drums have a little bit more feel, or, where the songs have space for a nice melody, So it's just like, but that kind of just collectively excites all of us right now. And that's why we made the record we made, because that's where all of our heads are at this one time. And, that doesn't mean it's just going to keep going that way. Like, when it comes to the next time to record, we really don't know where that will lead, but that's kind of really exciting. I think that, we're all really open to where the songs lead and where, our abilities can take us. And I know for me, I don't know if I ever thought that we could or would make some of the songs that we've made on this record, like it is a genuine surprise and a pleasant one, where we're like, hey, I'm impressed with where we've gotten,
Yeah. Well, before I get to asking you about some of these guitar parts, which surprised me, and it sounds like they pleasantly surprised some of your bandmates, or at least they were like, oh fuck, he's actually putting it down here, the stuff we know he's capable of. That other stuff that you're talking about in terms of songs that surprised you, Can you cite some of them from this record? Ones where you're like, oh, shit, I didn't think we could do this, and we pulled it off.
Yeah, the Superior Mirage definitely won a kind of groove that we've never done. And then just having that massive kind of lift to a chorus, I don't think we've ever nailed it as well as that. So that was super nice. And, you know, having sort of these soaring backing vocals too, things that I never thought we would make sense within the realm of Metz, you know, but I will give some well-earned credit to Seth Manchester, who made this record with us, and Atlas Vending as well. He's just that kind of guy who you can put your trust in and who is never content to repeat himself, you know, and that I think that rubbed off on us. And, you know, he's like, yeah, you can do better than that, or no, not quite there, you know. And I love just putting in the time. Like, there's no cutoff for me. Like, and the guys are the same, where it's like, we'll spend endless hours until it feels right. You know, yeah. It's almost my favorite part of the whole process, is just like, oh, we're getting closer, but we're not quite there. And then it feels great when you feel like you've kind of accomplished what you had in your mind. So yeah, I'm rambling, but the Superior, one of them. And then the obvious one being Light Your Way Home, definitely new territory in almost every regard. So
yeah. And for those who haven't heard it, the one term that came to mind, it's what these critics and whatnot use, shoegaze. It kind of reminded me more of that shoegaze term. Does that make sense?
I suppose. I mean, it's the easy genre.
Yeah.
To use. I think shoegaze, for the most part, isn't quite as banging in the rhythm section.
No, that's fair. And you know what else? This might, I don't know what this is going to do. Remember that band Sloan?
Oh, yeah.
They first, sorry, we all remember the band Sloan. We're Canadians. But the Sloan, when they first came out, they had that propulsive, gauzy sound. And I thought it was actually quite unique. You know, everyone said, oh, they sound like Sonic Youth. They sound like My Bloody Valentine. But I thought they were doing something quite unique. That particular song evoked like a Sloan B-side that I have in my heart and mind still. I think it's called Ragdoll. I don't know if you guys know that song. Mm. Anyway, I don't know if that was a thing for you ever, Alex. Yeah, no, Alex, you loved that stuff. You loved
Halifax
pop music.
The Murder Records stuff. Yeah, all of us liked that. And that was, you know, you were talking about Hayden, the other Hayden, and it makes me think of Much Music when they used to play, you know, Canadian indie rock and bands like the Inbreds and Eric's Trip and Sloan. And we all, that was on the TV when we got home from school. So
it's so weird. It's so, well, I appreciate, sorry. So in maybe intrinsically or inherently within you, those sort of influences are still lurking and sometimes they come out.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, the Eric's Trip influence is always going to be lurking with me. They're like my favorite band my whole life.
Oh, amazing. I didn't know that. That's great. You know, I like them too. I'm a big fan of theirs. So.
Toured with them once.
You toured with them?
Yeah, they did a reunion tour back in the day when I was in an emo band, and we opened up the Cross Canada tour.
Oh, my
so
God.
I'd watch them play every night.
What a dream for you.
It was great.
Look at that.
It was, yeah. It was very nerve-wracking being around those guys.
Yeah. Well, they were a bit quiet, except for Julie.
It's funny. Chris and Julie have become friends over the years. It's a real trip.
Yeah, for me too. Julie was just on this show. I did I did an oral history of You've Changed Records, and Julie's featured quite prominently. And it's always a joy to speak with her. She's the best, so...
Yeah, she's great.
I don't know why this occurred to me. This is going to be a weird tangent, but most of them have been, so it's probably fine. Alex just invoked Much Music, and I weirdly just had a thought about them today. Hayden, did you ever watch Much Music? Was that a big thing for you? I feel like it wouldn't be.
Oh, yeah. All the time, yeah.
Electric Circus, right?
What was your favorite show, Hayden? Did you have one?
One of my older brothers was really into the Power Hour, which became Power 30, and he was quite upset about.
Right.
But you know, stuff like The Wedge, and there was, I forget the name of the I think there was a show that showcased like Much East Coast, East, Much Indie East. Rock. Yeah. Was it just Much East? Yeah. Yeah, for sure. There was, it was pretty influential just to like, it was one of those tools to find the people that made sense to your world, whether that was at school or shows or skateboarding or something. It was one other asset that you could be like, oh, you like that band, or like, you know, and whether that's in the form of a t-shirt or talking about actual Much Music, it was another little, just a little clue to find the people that make your world make a bit more sense.
Yeah. Looking back, the selection was, you know, for every dud, there was a good, it seemed like it was 50-50 almost. I might be romanticizing that, but it was, there was a lot of good stuff and a lot of junk, but you were able to just, you know, decide what you would liked and go hunt it down at the record store or whatever. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of stuff on City Limits.
Oh yeah. That was
I used to record it.
And the new music. The new music is more of my speed because that was one of the shows where they did features, interview segments with people. And so when I might have been one of the first times I saw the John Spencer Blues Explosion on TV was this very awkward interview he did with the host at the time, one of the hosts. And I think Ian MacKay was on there too. Like, it was just like, oh, this is a whole window into things. I brought it up, or rather Alex brought up Much Music. So I'm just going to follow up on this tangent. About an hour and a half ago, I had your album playing while I was making lunch. My wife had heated up some leftovers, so she was already at the table. And I had your music playing because I thought, oh, I got to interview this band. I should listen to their album for the first time. I was cramming to hear the songs. Anyway, she was talking to me. Like, I told her, I got to do this interview, so I better listen to the album one more time. And I was listening to it, and she was talking to me. And, you know, that's normal. You know, people talk over music all the time. And for some reason, I had it in my mind, because I didn't say anything. I didn't say, hey, look, I got to listen to this important music by this band. It's a new chapter. They're like a book, lady. I didn't say any of those things. But I thought to myself, man, she's talking to me, even though she knows I have to listen to this record. Music is such a weird thing in that you guys know this probably better than me. People take it for granted all the time. People treat it as...
Did you use the line... Shut up, I'm trying to listen.
No, I didn't say any of those things. I just thought them. I just thought, I would never talk to anyone like that, let alone on my own podcast. I just thought, right. No, I had the thought of like, I'm trying to listen, but people are just used to talking over music and having it on in the background while they're doing stuff. And I thought music videos were kind of the first gateway into that. The music is not enough. Watch this. We're going to make music videos so that, yeah, we're promoting the song, but the song's not enough. Sorry, guys. This is just an ill-formed thought I had. And because Alex mentioned, you probably have a lot of great videos coming out, and I didn't mean to slam music videos, but do you know what I'm saying? Alex, does that resonate with you? Like, we were conditioned to listen to music while watching it. So the music was part of it, but kind of not. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Well, I've always thought of it as just a brilliant marketing scheme. Like it was undeniable, right? You would either get this piece of art, like this film when done well, or you just get this glamorous look at the musicians. And I don't know. I think it just moved units, right? So that was a success. Sometimes I wonder what long form music videos, what purpose they have. But that being said, we made some doozies on this record. I want to, you know, shout out Colin Medley too, who I believe was on one of your latest casts.
Yeah, that's right. He was on the You've Changed Records thing. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, talk about someone who dialed into the essence of the song and like really took it to another level. So I feel like, when done well, it's this beautiful thing. And
I'm not disparaging filmmaking. I think some of the most innovative filmmaking and artful filmmaking has actually occurred in music videos. I'll stand by that forever. I'm just saying, it never occurred to me that the song was fine on its own when I was growing up, because I always sort of married them to. I wasn't exactly like this. I bought records. I listened to music. But I don't know, Hayden, you're a visual guy as well, Hayden. Again, I just want to emphasize, I'm not suggesting the visual medium is a problem. I just think it was the first time I thought the music isn't enough. Like, you know, that we have to have this video with it, this film with it. Sorry, I shouldn't tell you my lunchtime theories. This is one of Vish's lunchtime theories. Hayden, is any of this resonating with you?
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, the romantic version is that it's a visual accompaniment to a piece of music that is supposed to make it that much better, or it's, you know, supposed to merge these mediums to make it even more of a statement. But in reality, that certainly occurs without a doubt. And there are very talented people who contribute to that being true. But there are also people who use it as a marketing tool for an evolving medium, which is television and the internet and things like that, where it's easy to offer a bit of FaceTime with musicians themselves or see what clothes they're wearing or product placement, or, you know, what have you. But, you know, two things can be true at the same time. So,
I guess so. I guess two things can be true at the same time. You're right. I never thought of that.
And now it's flipped. And music is simply the background to people's TikTok videos.
But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. It's really not the focus in the same way. And I think there's generations growing up where it doesn't have monetary value. So that's fascinating in a way where I know I wouldn't bat an eyelash at spending $20 on a CD that I just thought the cover looked cool and then take it home and spend hours upon hours dissecting it, reading the lyrics, seeing who recorded it. It was just what I loved to do. But, you know, that was just time spent with a record and money spent. And so I think maybe that plays into it, that you wanted to make your dollar go farther. I don't know. You'd spend time with it, even though you might not be totally in love with it.
Yeah, and if you didn't like it, you were mad both at the artist for making a record you didn't like and also the fact that they cost you money.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be mad on two fronts. And now
you'd almost not admit it to yourself. You're like, oh, it's pretty good. There's a couple good
things. I spent $20 on it. I have to figure out a way to like it. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. I thought the REM record was pretty good. What are you guys talking about? No, it sucks. I'm like, it cost me like $25. I think I like it. You know what I mean? Chris, do you have any perspective on this? I know it's a bit convoluted, but that's the word of the day. Music videos, songs, background music, you know, taking it.
I mean, Much Music was a gateway for me to a lot of stuff. I found out about a lot of music that I loved through Much Music. So music videos, I used to record them and rewatch them over and over and over again. So yeah, that medium always spoke to me as a kid. And as an adult, like, I still actually enjoy a really good music video.
Okay.
Something well produced and interesting.
Okay. No, and again, I'm friends with Colin Medley. Oh man, I'm going to get a text from Colin Medley about this one. I'm not criticizing the medium. I'm just saying what I said several times. I just wonder what it means that music is always this, increasingly so, as Alex was saying, a background thing, a secondary thing to, like, we have to put it on, we have to attach it to something. It's not got the merit on its own. I find that very complicated, and it's been going on for a long time. So I'm not sure why.
Yeah, you're really adding tragedy to something very beautiful.
Yes. Well, this is my job. This is the whole nature of the show, I think. Sorry, Alex, were you going to say something?
Well, I was just to close that, you know, I honestly think it's background because it is sort of considered to be free. I think those are connected. They kind of they live in the same. They're the chicken and the egg or whatever.
Yeah.
They're both. Cause if people don't value it because they can just flick it off if they don't like it and go to any other song in the whole universe, then, you know, it's just not going to ever be maybe people's focal point in the same way, or it's not going to have that same respect that other art forms are getting.
I think we could have a 5-hour conversation about this, and maybe someday we will if we're all in the same room to try to dive into this. Although, interesting segue, going back to the press materials that accompany this record, there's a reference to Owen Pallett, who contributed to this record, and I think you mentioned a couple of collaborators, so let's get into those. But what it says about Owen specifically here is, Owen Pallett's presence is an immediate indicator that Metz are thinking more cinematically than ever before. So that we're right there. We're right there. Again, it's like, this isn't just music. It's like a movie. So you know what I'm saying? sums up, guys. I feel like someone's up to something, and they're trying to make music only be associated with film and visuals. But I don't know why I'm talking about this. I'm full of pie and a sandwich, and my mind is racing. Anyway, let's talk about. Sorry, do you want to say, Alex? I see you smiling. This more cinematically than ever. Does that resonate with you? I gather you didn't write this bio, so maybe you're hearing.
We did not write that, and I had never. I had not heard that. very disappointing, very upsetting. But these songs definitely are more widescreen. They're more expansive. So, I mean, some of that terminology can come in, with cinematic, I guess, makes sense, because I think you can sort of get lost in it in a more real way than a short 2-minute punk song. But
yeah,
so there's more twists and turns, there's more atmosphere, so I think that's maybe what they're getting at. And as far as Owen,
yeah,
that's just a it's an honor to be able to collaborate with people who you respect as musicians, and that's an example of a part of our music taking place in the studio, and these chords and ghost notes all flying around in the room at loud volumes. And you start to imagine things, and you can start to hear things that I almost heard this melody there. Oh, I almost heard this. And I think we dreamed up the idea of, well, let's make this really build and really be something immense. And the idea of strings came in, and all three of us immediately agreed that, who should we ask? It should be Owen.
Of course.
And, of course. So it made perfect sense. So I think we were all on the same page. And then when we, got in touch, he was game and came back with just this brilliant stuff, And, so what can I really say? It's just kind of it's a treat and an honor when you get to do stuff like that, when it just comes that easy.
I think where we're landing a little, I appreciate that, Alex. Thank you. I think where we're landing in terms of Mets and maturity and evolution is, maybe the studio is becoming more of an instrument. Like, even as we talk about Alex's guitar parts or the way things are sitting in the mix, like, I hear all these layers of other guitars. Yeah. Like, there's the central kind of guitar part, and just interesting. Like, I've heard things where I'm like, oh, that's just an interesting choice. That's an interesting little layer that's kind of subtle. So I don't know, Chris, does it feel that way to you? Like, Metz is becoming like the Beatles in the mid-60s, retreating. Alex says, exactly. You guys were forced off the road, as lots of people were. The Beatles left the road and were like, you know what? We're just going to fucking make great studio records. I'm not saying you're off the road, but do you feel like there's more of a concerted effort, Chris, to use the studio to its full extent, bring in people that, enhance the songs? Because, you're not going to have to, you can't emulate what Owen did when you play live, unless he's around. So there's going to be a distinction between the sound of these songs live and this record. So do you think you're of the mindset, like, let's make a fucking real studio oriented piece of art, as we go?
I think it comes from, comfort. I think we found a real kinship with Seth when we went in to make Atlas Fending, and going back, Alex went and made his record with Seth as well. And then going back in, like, we kind of had, there was none of those like weird studio nerves. Like, am I going to be able to pull this off? And I think the idea of going in with confidence allows you the confidence to, explore and elaborate on structures and sounds and whatnot to build out what the songs are. I think more than anything, yeah, sure, the studio is an instrument, but the preparation and like the comfort in going into a room that you already know and trusting the people that you're working with is that helps with the evolution and to use the tools you have at your disposal.
Hey, and Metz has always seemed to me like because of what we used to say, the tightness of the band, like the actual, how tight you guys are together as a unit. They have always seemed like a band to me that, okay, studio time is blocked off. Let's fucking get these songs ready, so we're not fucking around in there. Is there any distinction between that sorry, first of all, please dispute this. If this is not how you work, let me know. But for this record, was there as much everything's ready to go, bed track wise, or was there an equal amount of, you know what, we're in the studio, let's just try some things. Like, we haven't worked this out, let's kind of improvise. Can you talk about that in terms of this record, Hayden?
There certainly was a bit more left open than we normally do before going into actually press record. In the past, I think it was a byproduct of the house of DIY that we all came from, which is studio time's expensive. Rehearse your stuff well. Make sure that you can crank out as many tunes as you can in a day and move on. It doesn't mean that you're being careless about it, or it's not getting the attention it deserves. It's a different approach.
Yeah.
No better, no worse. It's just different. But for this one, there certainly was a bit more. We felt confident. We felt comfortable with where things were and excited about trying to execute them well. But I think we did leave a little bit of space where we could pivot if needed, if need be, or to not, I suppose, not limit ourselves is a way to truncate the statement a bit more succinctly. It's just not limit time, not limit options, not limit ideas that come on the fly. You know, I remember watching Chris play the bass line for Superior Mirage, and not only was it nailed like the first time, but it was slightly different than what we had been doing in rehearsal. I can't describe how it was different. Yeah. It was note-wise, it was exactly the same. But there was something, which is a credit to his input on songs. But in a studio setting as well, I don't know. There seemed to be a bit more of, I can't think of a better term but just space. Making space for these little things to happen, these little things to occur, these little sparks to sort of ignite and be able to capitalize on those. You know, the same with some of Alex's vocal takes. It didn't seem to take any longer or any less. It was just, there was a presence to them that just fit. It just nestled so well into these songs in this studio, in the way that the songs had been prepared, to whatever extent that was.
Yeah.
So it's a long-winded version of saying not every bolt was tightened up.
No.
But we were certainly at a place where we felt like it was a very firm, comfortable launching pad to exploit those things that were left unsaid and also make sure that we weren't going to go too off the rails. So,
you know,
it seems like a perfect combination for us.
For those things that might be described as more impulsive, instinctual, even happenstance, do you sometimes find that you have more of an affinity, like when the record's done, you have more of an affinity for those supposed accidents than you do the really prepared stuff? I know I've had that experience where like, okay, these 10 songs were like exactly the way we've been playing them. But these two, like we just made up new arrangements. And then when I listen back, I'm like, I kind of like these. Like they feel more special because we didn't know what we were doing. And the magic, it's a bit psychological because everything with recording is like, can you believe this got captured? But for some reason, I have a thing where the freshest stuff, the stuff that we didn't plan to do, I just have an affection for it, almost a deeper affection for those seemingly improvised moments than the prepared stuff. And I don't, that's just maybe more about me, but do you know where I'm coming from with that?
Oh, I completely agree. Admittedly, I don't like to admit it, but I do find once I have a template for what the song is going to entail, I like to stick to it. And even to my detriment by trying to do take after take, even if there's something that happens off the, you know, out of the blue and it could be better, it might be right on time, but it's not what I planned. And so I deem it not the take. I've tried to get better at that and not have everything so rigidly planned out. And it's not because I have a rigid approach to music or art. It's just, I can't seem to shake this level, or this need for completion at some point. And completion is not perfection, but it needs to meet a standard that we kind of have. And so I've gotten much better at that. And this record in particular certainly forced us to flex that muscle, because there were songs where I didn't quite have some of the drum parts mapped out entirely. And that was a bit, I felt a little shaky going in because of that, but I genuinely think it turned out for the best. And that's, you know, we got exactly what we needed to.
I have a theory that all of us post-hardcore kids have control issues, and I'm going to leave that lying there, right now, because that's another five-hour podcast. But I do think it manifests itself sometimes in the way we play. Nothing's good enough, you know, or nothing's, like, it's both perfection and control issues. Again, we'll talk about this next time. Alex, you were going to say something about what Hayden and I were talking about there, about having an affinity for those happy accidents, I guess I was calling them.
Yeah. I was just going to agree with you. And, you know, there's that, whatever is the most fresh, you know, whatever, if that was the thing that came maybe the easiest and was a nice surprise, it's always going to have this sort of sentimental attachment. So, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Chris, did you want to speak to this, fellow control freak?
I kind of just agree with what everyone has said so far. Yeah. I've actually done my best to untangle some of those hardcore wires in my brain and be a little bit more open to change. Good. It's allowed a lot more happiness into my life, not being so rigid.
I would agree completely. Yeah. And I think that also came from playing with different people who are looser.
Yeah. You have to be willing to sort of accept what's coming back at you and sometimes be like, okay, well, I know what I wanted it to sound like, but I actually really like the way that this sounds now.
Yeah. Okay.
Being able to live with something and walk away from it is actually a really good thing.
I think so too. Yeah. There's a bit of Zen in our lives all of a sudden, which is good. I want to wrap up shortly, but I just realized that I asked Hayden if he thought the album was particularly angry, and I neglected to ask Alex this because a song like 99 came to mind as I was talking to Hayden. Alex, is there, with all the emotions that we've talked about, you got a little anger? Is there something you're angry about?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I think I've met my quota when it comes to that for songs, you know, throughout our catalog. But 99 is kind of interesting to me because it was, I walk Theo, my son, to school every morning, and we're right downtown, and, you know, there's just billboards and bus stops with ads and buses with ads and just everywhere you look. And, I was just trying to think through his eyes, like, and we've been doing the same path, you know, the same walk since he was, you know, in a stroller. And, just the amount of, bye being pushed down everyone's throats all the time since the moment you're born. That's just what that tune's about. And it's just about, you know, when's enough and, you know, corporate greed in general.
What is the significance of 99 though? Because I, as you guys know, I live in Edmonton, Alberta. I don't live that far from the Wayne Gretzky Parkway. So I saw 99 on there. I'm like, oh, is this about Gretzky?
That Will, our sound guy, was really hoping it was a Gretzky nod, but no.
That's really not about Gretzky. You know, that's one of the crushing things is that he turned out to be like not a great guy and like a conservative guy.
Is that true?
Yeah. He's like, he shills for the conservatives. This is another 5-hour podcast, but yeah.
Maybe we can tie it into the song of after all. 99's a buck, right? It's a dollar. That's what it means.
Yeah, no,
that's what it's in the song. Yeah.
I gather that might be the case since it was about consumption and that they make it seem like you're not spending as much by saying it's not a dollar.
It's 99 cents.
Yeah. Wait, what are you talking about? I want to buy some. You just said the magic word.
Buy our record, by the way.
Yeah, we should buy the record.
It's under 99. Yeah.
Up on Gravity Hill is also an evocative title. Alex, did you name this album?
Yeah, and I don't have a great... Even if I did, I maybe wouldn't share it because I want to leave that. I like that it makes people kind of think a little bit and maybe it can mean something to everyone. It means something to me, but I don't exactly want to share. And it is sort of one of those fluky phrases anyway that just sort of popped in my head and then everyone liked the kind of ring of it. So, you know.
For those outside of Canada, I believe Gravity Hill's in Nova Scotia, right?
No comment.
Okay. Maybe I have that wrong.
No, I mean, there is one there. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll leave it alone. I don't know what it means. And we sounds like if I didn't get to the bottom of it, no one will. Because
no
I
will.
Got all these guys here. And
the one you're thinking of is Magnetic Hill.
Oh, I'm thinking of Magnetic Hill. I'm sorry. Okay.
Nice try.
What am I thinking of? Oh, you know what else? Jem Cohen. Do you guys know the filmmaker Jem Cohen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. His film company is called Gravity Hill. That I know.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway.
He did Instrument?
Yes, that's right. Jim Cohen did Instrument, the Fugazi documentary. So I assume when someone says, are you up on Gravity Hill? It means, are you up on their latest releases? Anyway, we'll leave that.
Great.
Sorry, guys. I like to ruin everyone's time by the end and suggest meetings I didn't even think of. Future plans. Let's get to those real quick before we wrap up. I know you got tour dates coming up, and it's knowing you guys, is it as extensive as always, Chris? Going to be gone a long time?
It's a little more, a little easier than in previous. You know, we're not playing 300 shows this year.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah, you know, we're hitting a lot of places. We're traveling a lot.
Okay. Okay. That's coming up. Hayden.
We're not coming to Edmonton.
Not coming to Edmonton. Why not? Because of me?
No offer.
No offer. Oh, okay. That still sounds like it's about me. I'll put an offer in the mail. I'll write you a letter and see if we can get you out here somehow. That's too bad. Old I'm school. Sorry. That's
you can find my number and book your own fucking life.
Okay. All right. Hayden, is the band working on fresh material since the completion of this album? Any writing, anything like that going on?
Oh, I thought you said the van.
No, I meant
the band working on fresh material. And not the van's barely holding it together, but it's still kicking.
Everyone should know that all of the songs written by Metz are written by their van.
In the van.
I meant to say the band Metz. Any new stuff?
I mean, what do you want from us? We just got this one ready.
It's not even out yet.
I'm very.
No, we're always talking about something, but one thing at a time, and we're really excited about this one.
Woo.
It's upon us.
Well, again, congratulations. I hope you guys are feeling good about it.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. It feels
thanks,
good.
Vish.
So excited.
Now, if people want to learn more about Metz on the internet and follow the tour dates and whatnot, Chris, where would you like to direct them?
We have a website that is frequently updated. It's Metz, MetzZTEM.com. You can find all the tour dates, ticket links, videos, shop, like all you, whatever country you happen to live in. You can buy records and t-shirts and hats and underwear on there. And I'll let Alex plug the social media. Mm.
Yes, Alex?
All of the places.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's all you're all there. You're on Twitter, you're on everything.
Yes, we're out there. We are.
Okay.
We're on Friendster and MySpace.
MySpace. Yep. Yep. Okay, I'll link to those things. Sorry to ask about your URLs, guys.
No,
but
that's helpful. Thank you. It's easy to find. It's all there.
Okay. Some people are abandoning things. That's why if you had been like, by the way, we deleted our Instagram because of, you know, whatever. This is the time to find out.
I did see something pretty awesome today. My friend Pat Flagel does this from Calgary, does a band called Cindy Lee. And I saw he put out a new double record that is only available from his GeoCities website, which is so awesome.
That's a good call. I should check out that Cindy Lee record. That's a good call. Just down the road from me. All right. If we can go out on a song from Up on Gravity Hill, I wonder if one of you can pick one and the rest of you can dispute this if you want to. Pick one and tell us why. I'm going to go with Alex. Alex, do you want to pick the song?
Sure. Let's do the opening track.
Okay. Why did that come to mind?
It's kind of this journey. I think it's a great way to kind of usher the listener into the world of the record. It's nice and long and has many twists and turns. And it's kind of like maybe in classical music world, you'd be called it a movement. So maybe there's like three or four movements in this tune.
Such a mature approach to arranging a punk rock song. Unbelievable. It's cinematic even. Anybody dispute this choice? Chris, you okay with this?
I'm good with it. Yeah.
Hayden?
I like that song.
Agreed.
Okay. This is No Reservation / Love Comes Crashing by Metz from Up on Gravity Hill. Alex, Chris, Hayden, I love you guys very much. I appreciate you tolerating my buffoonery and tomfoolery by coming onto the show and as often as you have. It really means a lot to me, and I hope you enjoyed at least some aspect of this, and I wish you the best of luck in the future. Thanks again for your time.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vish. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, love you.
There you go. I hope you enjoyed that little taste you got of the new Metz album, Up on Gravity Hill. Thanks again to Alex, Hayden, and Chris for always being on this show, it seems. Every time they have a record out, they're on the show. It means a lot to me, and I hope you enjoyed that conversation. And again, thanks to all of them for appearing on this, the 854th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you've heard about and you're looking for it, or if you want to learn more about me and even sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkhanna.com. There's a link in the show notes that says follow Vish online. That'll direct you to all my social media handles and also take you to other sites like YouTube and other podcast players. And I think there's other stuff on there too. So click on that if you want to engage with me on the internet. Also, speaking of which, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast going. There are different tiers with different incentives of support. You know, this is my primary source of income, so whatever you can afford to throw in there, that would be great. But like I say, at the, let's, for example, at $4 a month, ad-free episodes earlier than everybody else gets them. $6 or more a month, you get that stuff, plus you get some bonus content. $10 or more a month, you get everything I just said, plus you get entered into monthly prize pack draws that we've been doing of late. So, yeah, I hope that incentivizes you. Otherwise, you know, just looking for support. And if you can afford it and want to keep this show going, please join the Patreon today if you can. Thank you so much. Also want to thank the amazing Blackbird Music, which is a record store with bricks and mortar locations in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta. And you can learn more about them and even order records right from their website there at blackbird.ca. Also want to thank independent businesses like Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. My friend Jim Guthrie lets me use some music he made on the show sometimes. In fact, if you can pick it up right now in the background, that's one of Jim's songs, instrumentally there. So Jim is great. You can learn more about him at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you for listening to this episode with Metz and for grabbing a copy of their new album, Up on Gravity Hill. It's great. I love that band, and they're very nice and kind people, always have been to me. So please support Metz. Go see him if you can. And if you can, subscribe to this podcast. Tell your friends all about it. Spread the word about it. That helps me, and maybe it'll help them. Who knows? Anyway, I got to go. I will talk to you very soon. Thank you. Bye for now.